Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All I've heard all year, Jonathan Kuminga, Kuminga, Kuminga. He's so athletic. Oh, is he this? Is he? Wow.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Shout out, Leroy. That was a pretty good call.
It was.
All right, Giddings in for Guru. Steinmetz here with you. We see you, Dennis. We're going to get to your call in a second. But so you've been doing a little digging during the commercial break.
Yes.
What have you found, Steiny? Or what are you sniffing around?
Okay, so let me get nonverbal communication with Risotto. We're good. Okay, so I'd forgotten this, but it makes sense. So Scott Perry's the general manager of the Kings. Who did he hire as his assistant general manager? BJ Armstrong. Does anybody remember when BJ Armstrong talked about Kuminga on his podcast that he was doing? And this was in the middle of the season. Take a listen to this. This is BJ Armstrong, who is now the assistant general manager of the Kings, a team supposedly interested in Kuminga. Take a listen.
The Jonathan Kuminga, provided he comes back and he's able to play like the Jonathan Kuminga or that talent, and you integrate that level of talent, that's a huge bonus for this Warriors team. I think that will be a very interesting storyline for us to observe because, you know, they got the big three there with Draymond, Steph, and Jimmy. And then all of a sudden you integrate a Kuminga in there, you put Gary Payton in there. All of a sudden now you're looking at a team that's saying, on any given night, for sure they can win. And in any given series, they have at the very least a fighter's chance.
He likes him.
That wasn't the one I wanted, actually. It was the one where he says something's up with Kuminga.
No, stay hot.
Damn it.
Well, we'll work
on... Come on, Risotto!
We'll work on getting that sound. You know what you can do in the
future? Google, like, just go onto YouTube, say BJ Armstrong on Kuminga, and it was the first one that came up for me. You know, I love you,
it.
Buddy.
I found it. Stay tuned.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You know what you can also do next time?
Yes.
You can find it and send him the link. So that way, he has the specific sound.
You know what?
When you want it.
You know what?
When you need it.
What a perfect timing, because we've got somebody on the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line. Great show, guys, but Matt, can you get mad and yell at Evan? We're missing Guru a little bit. Well, now's the perfect time.
Shut up,
Evan. There you go. Happy?
Well, but I, well, yeah.
Shut up, Evan.
Yeah, no, that's, this happens more off here. That's the thing, like, even though you and I do, I think most times agree on the air and people think it's, I don't know. Yeah, not as feisty.
Right.
You and I disagree more off the air than you and Goo. Like, I actually think that people don't catch you at the cafeteria to know that you and Guru are pretty easygoing off the air.
Oh, yeah.
You guys get pissed at me all the time.
We do. We do.
I mean, you guys beat me up just day to day. As soon as I walk in at 8 o'clock, you're like...
Well, first of all, Guru's not here at that point, so
well, it's,
there's a factual problem.
No cheap shots, even though it's factual.
Yeah.
Do we have it?
Hang on.
All right. So, but I think we are on to something, though. I don't know if Kuminga looks at the Kings as the best place for him. I still think he wants to get to Phoenix. If Kuminga had his way, he wants to get to Phoenix. But I do believe that the team that is chasing him the hardest right now is the Sacramento Kings. And a big reason for that is because of your old pal BJ Armstrong. He really likes him. And we're about to hear in a second kind of why or what he thinks is going on there. But to me, Sacramento's the team right now that has the best chance to get Kuminga. I think just because they also have a pick. You know, Phoenix does not have a draft pick to trade, and that's one of the requirements that the Warriors are asking for.
Yeah, and the we'll play this BJ Armstrong sound in a second. It's not so much that at the time he liked Kuminga or loved Kuminga, although he does, he likes him, but it's he was questioning, like, what's happening in Golden State where this guy, you know, isn't more of a factor. And we'll eventually get it. Risotto's feeling the pressure. Risotto's feeling the pressure.
Now, Pasta, you can play it off of the computer if you really need.
We got it. It's all good. We got it.
We'll see if we got it. All right. Should I set it up again? All right. B.J. Armstrong was hired to be the assistant general manager in Sacramento. And in the middle of last season, he was on a podcast. Well, he had kind of his own podcast, does a lot of podcasts, and he uses video in his podcast. Anyway, this is what he had to say at the time, fingers crossed, about Jonathan Kuminga.
There must be something that I'm missing with Jonathan Kuminga that only you can see when the cameras aren't on. And the reason I'm going to say something, when I watched him play the other night against the Sixers, he's athletic. He gives you effort on the defensive end. He plays a brand of basketball that you're saying, this guy could be, ought to be, should be. Well, he shoots the ball from three. He drives to the basket. He's versatile enough to defend multiple positions. And he's capable, you know, he's capable of scoring 20 points as a starter. 20 points off the bench. In this era, it's positionless basketball. There must be something that I can't see. It has to be. Based on what I can see, I began to question the people, why doesn't he play more? Okay.
You cannot tell me that he doesn't have interest and the Kings don't have interest in Kuminga. Like, he basically is saying that. He's like, it almost, and this is, and this, unfortunately, is where I think Kuminga is, and it doesn't do him any favors. Like, B.J. Armstrong and every GM in the league's tapped in.
Yeah.
But in their heart of hearts, nobody still knows what to make of Kuminga. Like, even B.J. said, God, there's so much to like. So something must be going on. I got to think about, you know, why he's not playing. On the one hand, I could see you want a guy like that. Just get him in here, and we can see if he can turn into a great player. The problem is you can't give up something very valuable to just find out. You got to know. But maybe this is where the negotiation comes in, and you know, there is a pick, some kind of pick attached, rather than maybe a player the Warriors don't want or a player that the Kings don't want to give up. But yeah, there's way too much of a connection there for me not to believe that absolutely, positively, the Kings have interest in Jonathan Kuminga. No doubt.
I agree. And I think that, look, if you're looking at that team, there's only really a couple players that fit the young mold, and the Kings obviously have a protected pick. That was already going to be involved in the Devin Carter and Sharks deal. But, I mean, the guy I think the Warriors want in return is Keegan Murray. I think that's who they want from Sacramento. And I completely understand why the Kings would not want to give him up. But if you can't get the young player and the pick, to me, if you're going to do a deal with Sacramento, the best case scenario would be to find a way, we talked about him before the break, to get DeMar DeRozan from Sacramento in exchange for Jonathan Kuminga. He has 2 years left on his deal. It would set him up with Curry, Draymond, and Jimmy. I know he's an older player, but he's played 70-plus games the last four seasons. He led the NBA in minutes per game 2 years ago, and he can score the ball. He can't play lick of defense, but he can score. And if you don't think that it's a salvageable situation with Kuminga, which most people, I think, are at the point of, then to me, if Keegan Murray's not on the table and I'm doing a deal with Sac, I'm trying to get DeRozan.
Yeah, and I think it's becoming apparent, and you've said as much, and I think the Warriors have said as much too. This is a year-to-year deal right now. And I don't dislike DeRozan. He's up there, obviously, but so is Horford. But if we're talking about a year at a time, you know what? That fits their timeline. What's their timeline? Trying to cram another one in for Steph Curry. I'm not saying it's going to happen with DeRozan and Horford, but at least those two guys don't muck up your future. You know, you take a swing at it again. You take another swing at it again. And then next year, you're closer to having to do something more dramatic.
Well, and people in the YouTube chat are saying Keon Ellis is someone that the Warriors should be interested in. I understand that. I don't really know what his situation is right now, because I think he has a team option, but they're trying to figure out if they can extend him. And maybe it would be a swap. He's 25 years old. He's 6'5". He's an on-ball defender. He started 28 games last year and shot 43% from three. He's a good player. I guess I don't know if and again, this is under the assumption the Kings aren't willing to give up a young player, that the Warriors can't get what they want, which is a young guy and a pick. And I'm trying to see if there's a possible needle that we can thread there. Let's go out to San Francisco and talk to Dennis. Wants to get in on the conversation. If you want to, too, 888-957-9570 is the number. Getting's in for Guru alongside Steiny. Dennis, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good. How you guys doing? Yeah, I wouldn't mind DeRozan. But no matter what they do, they're not going anywhere. You know, not with these old guys, and that's why, I've said I don't know how many times in this show, I don't like the Jimmy Butler trade, even though he did come in and he did, the Warriors won. They were playing a real good brand of basketball, but it's just not enough. Not with the way the league is now, and I just don't think that we can compete with the better teams in the West, and I don't think whatever they do, it's not going to help, you know. And I was wondering if the Warriors could get signed Kuminga, if nobody, you know, if they can't work anything out, just sign him maybe for, give him 3 years at 20 a year, and then they could, I think that'd be an easy contract to trade if they don't want to keep him, you know, that they could possibly do that, you know. I think Kuminga's deal is he doesn't want to stay here because he doesn't trust that Kerr will give him any playing time.
I think you're right.
I think that's, yeah. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
He's looking to play. He wants to play so he can get better. Because he said that, was it two years ago or whatever? He said, he called Kerr out. He said, I can't play for this guy. He won't play me. I'm not going to get any better if he doesn't play me. You know, and that's what he called him out, and that's been the situation. He hasn't been able to play. He does something wrong, he comes out, you know. And, you know, so I don't blame him for not wanting to be here. I don't think he wants to be here. I don't think he trusts Kerr.
Yeah, I'm 100%
with you. I don't disagree with that one iota. You want some good news?
First, let me do the
lead. Sure.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, Laughing Monk Righteously Brewed in San Francisco. What's the good word, Steiny?
Give me some good news, damn it. So, Steph was on a podcast. Speedy something. Anyway, Curry's basically making it official. He wants to play after this contract is over. Like, he's got two more years left in his deal. And I've noticed that he's using the word, like he said, I'm not close to retiring. And he uses the word a few years. A few is more than two.
It's three.
It is. And so, here's what I am going to be fascinated.
Well, thank God. It's one of the only things they got going right now.
I asked you this because I think Steph Curry is so unique and he's so different than anybody else. And if you look at the history of guards in this league, it's really hard to play as long as Steph has played. So I asked you this. How do you think Steph Curry is going to age? Like, what does it look like when he is, you know what I mean? Like,
when he's 40?
Yeah. And you know, I mean, you know, he's not going to average 28 a game. So, okay, John Stockton played 20 years or whatever it is. You could kind of see it because he was a pass-first point guard. He initiated the offense. When he had an open jumper, he took it. He was a good shooter. But a lot of other guards tend to fizzle out in their mid-30s. So Curry right now is in a place that very few players have ever been, especially a guard, and that is he's still offensively and scoring-wise playing at a very high level. So what does it look like for Steph Curry as he goes from 28 a game to 25 a game? What did he average last year, 24?
24 and a half.
What does it look like for Steph when he goes from 24 a game to 21 a game? What does it look for, what does it look like when he maybe averages 17 a game in 2 or 3 years? He is an outlier in basketball history where he's at right now in his career.
What I think it looks like is the percentage of his shots that are three-pointers, that percentage goes up, like his three-point rate. So his overall, last year he attempted 11 threes a game. He made almost five. He was great from three. From two, wasn't as efficient as he's been in prior years. And I think his number of field goal attempts was like 18. So what I think it looks like is, all right, next year he might be taking 16 shots a game, but he's still taking 10 threes or 11 threes. Like, what I think it looks like is he's, a lot of people might think it's, I don't know, you're taking the three away from him more. I think the majority of his shots are going to be from three. I think that's what his career looks like at the end, because he's not able to get to the mid-range and into the paint. We saw at times last year this happen, but he just wasn't able to get to the cup. So, I mean, does it look like his point total going down? Maybe, but I just think it's him being almost more of a three-point specialist than he's ever been.
And then that reminds me of when we interviewed him the last time, and we brought up, how long are you going to play? And he said the same thing, a few more years. And remember I said, could you see yourself coming off the bench at some point? And he goes, he's like, it's almost like he hadn't thought about it. And I just,
this team?
True. I just mean, if he was thinking about at the end of his career, would he be open to coming off the bench? And again, Curry is a different animal, and he is something so unique and important to us that the way he, phases out, it's going to be it's going to be important how it's done. You know what I mean? Like Tim Duncan, everybody, Tim Duncan was great.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He allowed Kawhi to take, he started every game. Tim Duncan started every game. Dirk Nowitzki started his whole career. So, I think it's going to be up to Steph. Does he just want to hang it up when he's doesn't feel like he's a player he's been? Or does he say, I know I'm not the player I've been, but I'll come off the bench. I'll come off the bench and play 25 minutes and get you 18 a game.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to say it than to do it.
I think you might be right.
I remember listening to an interview where Kobe was, just kind of joshingly talking about, You think I'd hang around if I'm averaging 25? If I'm not the best version of myself, basically, you think I'm gonna sit around and just do that? Well, yeah, his last game he scored 60 points, but the last couple of years after his Achilles injury, Kobe Bryant was an inefficient scorer. He didn't have it anymore.
Right.
And it took him a year or two to figure that out. That all right, I gotta finally hang this up. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. But speaking of saying it, the great Stephen Rizzotto, Pasta, found that sound of Curry answering that question, and here it is.
Down the line, could you ever see yourself coming off the bench?
I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I think everything's on the table. To the question of defining, how long do I want to play? What is it going to take for me to do that? I'll answer those questions, but I'm open to anything. If it means I can win, Nobody wants to just be around just existing. If it means I can win, I'd approach it anyway.
And this is where Curry's different. I do think that I can't envision him coming off the bench anytime soon. But the fact that he's even open to the idea is why he's different.
I can't imagine, the more I think about it, he cannot come off, he can never come off the bench for the Warriors. But if he were to go somewhere else at 40, I think then that would be okay for him to come off the bench, especially if he was the bona fide sixth man on a team that he thought could win a title. Like, a little bit like Bill Walton did for the Celtics in the mid-80s, where he was, you know, he was healthy, wasn't at his peak, but was still really good, won the sixth man of the award, won the sixth man award, and then, you know, won a title, won a second title.
I would give you that if Curry, God forbid, got hurt, perhaps. But if he also came off the bench in the playoffs, and I know it was a different circumstance, and he was coming off of injury, but like I don't think it's crazy if he really believes it's better for the team, not for him, but for the team, for him to come off the bench. But to me, that's why he's also, I think, looking at, right, I'm not going to be done for at least for a few years. I'll be around. Like, I'm playing until I'm 40, because if he's still playing meaningful basketball and he can help the team, I don't think role really matters to him.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it from a practical standpoint of, you know, 2028. Like, who's going to start in front of him?
Well, we don't know that now.
Like, I know. But
No, I'm serious. Like, I mean, I have no clue.
Because you also can't have Steph coming off the bench if you're not very good. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
Like, I don't want him as a starter anymore if we're not very good.
No, and then that's kind of why the anyway. Kuminga thing has been such a, like, an issue. It's, you have one player who might have had the potential to sort of, again, ease the load. Like, that's what Kerr is trying to sell him on, is that's his role next year. You can be here to sort of help the old guys manage the season. You don't want to do that.
Well, I get, you know, he's a different personality than this guy, but this guy was a great player, and he had trouble dealing with the end of his career. And if I mention this guy's name as a concern for, you know, Curry's future, like, look at Allen Iverson. Like, he could not, like, he just couldn't come off the bench because he was unable to, like, he wasn't going to come off the bench for the Memphis Grizzlies, who, you know, weren't great at the time.
Did you ever think Carmelo Anthony would come off the bench?
Uh-uh.
He did. Now, he did it for different teams. Like, he didn't obviously stay with one team his whole career. But I also didn't think Russell Westbrook would be a player that would be willing to come off the bench. He never struck me as that kind of dude, and he
touché.
Did.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Did pretty well for the Nuggets last year. So
he's still out there.
Yeah, he's waiting on Ben Simmons' market. I read that this morning, that Russell Westbrook's market, it cannot be determined until Ben Simmons picks a location.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but...
Stop.
Sign Russell Westbrook, whatever. Oh. Like...
Are you going to say Ben Simmons?
Him too. Sign them both. Both in here.
Well, Seth Curry could be a Warrior. He's been linked to Golden State. He's got a podcast. He'd fit right in.
Shocked you talking to me.
The interesting guy to me is Brogdon, Malcolm Brogdon.
I'd be very interested in him.
If he's healthy. But, you know, he's another guy. He plays it, you know, he's not athletic. And if you lose Kuminga, you get less athletic. So then the question becomes, you want to get less athletic with another veteran player.
I got you. You want to get into some Niners on the
yes.
other side? I know you got some strong thoughts about something Robert Saleh said yesterday. We'll leave it up for the listeners, but I feel a little bit more strongly about what I said yesterday. How about that? 888-957-9570 is the number. Gettings in for Guru alongside Matt Steinmetz. Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock, the Valkyries take on the Dallas Wings. And you can hear the game right here on 95.7 The Game or on the Valkyries channel on the Odyssey app. Just download the app and search Valkyries. All brought to you by San Francisco Sheriff's Office. Your future begins here. Let's get into some 49ers training camp after a couple days. of course, continuing today through the weekend. All that coming up on The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. Steiny with it as always. Good to be back on Monday. Spent the first couple hours talking about kind of the updates with Jonathan Kuminga. Story yesterday from Anthony Slater via ESPN. Fred Katz of The Athletic this morning. And now I want to pivot, transition to the 49ers, which actually I thought this morning before we got into some of these stories and updates, I felt like you were strong on the Niners this morning. There was something that sort of caught your eye or that you've been ruminating about between yesterday and today. What's been going on?
I've just been giving the Niners a lot of thought. Where they are now in the context of the Kyle Shanahan era. And yesterday we talked about, you know, what do you guys think? Is it closer to a rebuild or is it or they're closer to contention at this point? And, you know, I'm looking at this team. And if let's say you think it's a rebuild or even a partial rebuild, I would tell you that we don't even know if it's a rebuild at this point.
How so?
Because if you're telling me that the San Francisco 49ers may have 6 to 8 new starters on defense, then the first thing we've got to find out is if they can even play. Because it's great if you got 6 to 8 young players on your defense, but that's not encouraging if you realize they're not as good as you think. And so I don't know that this iteration of the Niners with 6 to 8 new defensive starters are going to have staying power. I mean, rookies sometimes fail. Guys going into their second year sometimes don't get better. And the difference between their offense and defense to me is just staggering. Like, they're not, like, their offense is, it's set outside the wide receiver. I know they're having wide receiver. In a perfect
There's
world.
There's a couple holes, but yeah, for the most part, we know who's going to be on offense.
Right. But the defense, and that's the other thing that's starting to hit me. The defense is such a question mark that it is starting to get hard for me to just, you know, it's going to be hard for them to win the division. It really is, I think, because it's just, it's so new and different. And the one thing Kyle Shanahan and Saleh are absolutely emphasizing is that, well, this team's different. This team's different. And I think they're saying that because it's right. It is different. And they're not sure that this thing's all going to pan out. They'll do the best they can, but they're not sure that, oh, in 3 years, I mean, we know right now we've got the core for a championship defense in 2 or 3 years. You don't know that.
Well, that's why I felt a couple days ago when this the whole thing kicked off, I thought this is the most important training camp in the Kyle Shanahan era because they still have the expectation of competing and getting to the postseason, honestly, combined with having 6 or 8 potential new starters on both sides of the ball. And I think primarily on defense, and that's what you're talking about. The 415 on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line feels the same. 6 to 8 new rookie starters. I don't know about rookie starters, right, but new starters. Hello? It's obviously a rebuild. Well, I wouldn't quite say it's a rebuild, but again, yesterday I felt like it was closer to that than a Super Bowl contender because You're hoping to hit on like a couple of these guys. I mean, if Mykal Williams, who yesterday, I think Trent Williams compared him to DeForest Buckner. Like, if that's a dude, okay, that's one. You got one guy. That's a hit.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If Alfred Collins, he looks like he moves really well for a guy who's 320, 30 pounds, maybe that's a hit. Okay, that's two guys, but you got 6 to 8 different positions on both sides of the football, mainly defense, that you got to figure out. And the one thing that screamed just question mark on the defense was what Robert Saleh, the actual coordinator, said yesterday about the safety position as things stand.
It's wide open. You know, it's JP Pinnock coming in, Richie Grant, Siegel being a rookie, obviously Jair, Mustafa, and then there's some young guys back there that are fresh with Mahoney and Canteen and Neil. I'm sure I'm going to forget. I'm forgetting somebody, but it is a wide open competition at safety and at both spots.
They don't know who their safeties are. They have no clue who both their free and strong safeties are. I'm sorry, that's a problem. Like that, and I know an issue with that is because Mustafa, who would be one of your starters, is dealing with a knee injury and he's going to be back midseason. So when that happens, he'll slot back in. But Robert Saleh is telling us, like, we got open tryouts. We have tryouts for two critical positions on defense.
Let me ask you this. And after I ask it, just tell me if you've ever been asked this question before.
Well, if it's a Steiny original, then probably not.
So how important is it to have a good offense and good defense in the same year?
Very.
And that's, I think, could be the
I mean, if you want to compete, like to win, right. I think to win the division, yeah, you got to have strengths on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and I think the disparity is too great. Well, I think the disparity is very
on paper
significant
right now.
Yes, between the offense and the defense. I mean, could we have a situation like Cincinnati where the offense is throwing up 30, 35, but they can't stop anybody? What I'm getting at is, and I don't want to get too far down the road, but let's look at it the other way. And this would be a great thing. Let's say the defense is good this year and you figure out you've got some cornerstones on defense that, boy, in 2 or 3 years are going to be really good, really good. All right? But then McCaffrey won't be here and Trent Williams won't be here and Kittle won't be here. And I get it. You're going to have to restock, but it just is hitting me that you got to do both those things at the same time to be a legitimate contender. And I just think, without getting 3 years down the road, I think that's a lot to ask this year for the 49ers. And if they do it, it's a credit to Shanahan, Lynch. It's a credit to Shanahan's coaching, and it would be a credit to Lynch and Shanahan's drafting. But boy, They're asking for a lot out of their defense, and their defense is going to have to maintain some standard for them to be a playoff team. But it's a clear work in progress, and it's just beginning.
Well, I think it's exciting that we're going to get to find out just who these guys are. We're going to learn about them throughout the season. But I would also say that the other side is it's going to be frustrating at times. Like, we're going to see rookies make mistakes. We're going to see guys play basically like young players do. They're going to be sometimes good, sometimes bad, and the odds of finding a replacement for all of these positions in one season, to me, is too much to ask. And one of the reasons why I thought that, you know, during their Super Bowl run a couple of years ago, run to a Super Bowl, is even at positions where they didn't have like a stud, they had a veteran player. They would have guys that you could trust. And I don't yet know that about these players. That's why I think Saleh is the man for the job. I think it was a great hire, the fact they were able to get him. This was a guy who had head coaching talks. And just to have some semblance of consistency at that position, which they have, and it's been from Steve Wilkes. Last year, their DC was a disaster. And now, at least, you have a guy who knows what he's doing there. But you have to give him pieces. And I'm looking at, all right, Bosa, Warner, Demo. Those are all players you can build around. But you don't have either of your two safeties right now, or you don't feel good about them. Your weak side linebacker is a question mark. And then your two defensive tackle positions are question marks, even if you assume Mykel Williams is going to set the edge on the other side. So they have to plug a lot of gaps. And what I'm afraid of, Steiny, is that it's going to be too much at times during the season for the offense to overcome, which is what we saw a lot of last year. The offense on paper wasn't horrible. If you look at some of their numbers, like they got yards. They couldn't score touchdowns.
Right.
But they got a lot of yards. They found big plays. They just couldn't punch it in. But they're involved in games where they have to do more than I think they're capable of. And I'm just worried that the defense, because of the youth, might be letting them down this year.
It's possible, and it's possible they could, you know, let him down here and there over the course of the season. I think the other part of this, and I get it, it's not a huge part of it, but I think it's certainly a factor, is special teams. And they were terrible last year in that department. But if you have a team, let's say, with a great offense, but a very good offense, but not a very good defense, then you need your then that tells me you may be involved in a lot of games that are competitive, just like last year. So the special teams, like, they're going to be hugely important this year, because I do think the 49ers are going to be in a lot of competitive games. And I don't know what's going to happen with Moody, but they can't, you know, miss game-winning field goals when they have a chance. You know, they can't give up a 50-yard return on a kickoff with a minute left in a game and they had to have to get a hold. Those things really hurt them last year, and they got to be a lot better in special teams, and not just like Moody needs to be better. Like the whole tone of the special they were not very good on special teams last year.
No, and I think that's why they brought in another kicker. You know,
yeah.
Greg Joseph is getting an opportunity to win that spot opposite Jake Moody. Nick Bosa is interested in the kicking competition.
Can I hear? I heard he said something, but I didn't actually hear it.
Well,
is he interested in the kicking, or is he not interested in the kicking?
You know, I'm gonna be looking at it this year, and I think our kickers are gonna be important, and I'm interested to see. I'm more interested than ever. I actually don't have the sound on my board, so that's my best Nick Bosa. Okay. But one thing that do we have?
Lucas, can you get that Bosa sound where apparently he's either interested or not? Oh, I didn't see Risotto back there. Sorry, Steven. You know the sound we're talking about where I guess Bosa weighed in on the kicking stitch. Thank you.
Kicking competition at all, it's a little different this year, right? Is you having one kick, the other guy kicks?
I actually didn't pay attention to it, but can't lie.
Why is it different?
No, it's kind of exciting.
That's it?
He's excited.
So wait, he said he's not paying attention to it, but it's kind of exciting? Can somebody explain that one to me?
It's
so exciting, he's got to check out.
He's got a lot going on in his head, Steiny.
That's true. He's got to be a leader this year, that's right. He's going to be a leader, so he can't be spending time with the kickers.
Well, also, a piece of unfortunate news to pass down. The Valkyries, who play tonight, Steiny, are going to be without Kayla Thornton going forward, who suffered an injury to her right knee earlier this week in practice, was just representing the Valkyries at the WNBA All-Star Game. She underwent a successful surgery earlier today, so she's out for the remainder of the season.
That hurts. Best player, only All-Star.
Yeah.
Strength in numbers.
Well, it sucks. Yeah.
And Nikasa.
They've been playing really well this year.
Let's go. We got it. It's going to come down to coaching. Actually, I do think she's a really good coach. I like her demeanor.
I really like Thornton.
Yeah.
She's a badass. That sucks. There's something. Oh, this was the other part that I meant to touch on from Saleh. So I think they're kind of preparing us they're preparing us for, I don't know, just like a period where this team doesn't look all together. I don't think that they're going to be, they can't be a finished product at the beginning of the season because they won't have Ayuk. They're not going to have Mustafa. And those are two impactful players on both sides of the ball. But I think they're preparing us for a little bit of uneasiness to start this season, because I also think there's going to be a lot of changes, mostly to defense, but I think Shanahan would love to give veteran players the inroad to starting spots, and then depending on how they play, he might have to go with some rookies. I think there's going to be a lot of shuffling this season, and Robert Saleh kind of hit the nail on the head yesterday when he was asked about it.
Anytime you have that much turnover and that much change, there's going to be a process of gelling and getting to know one another, and again, just understanding the system and how you play together at a high level. But whether they're veterans or young, the expectation is that you get better throughout the course of the year, regardless. Whether you're a 10-year vet or a young rookie taking his first snap, you go to bed better than when you woke up every day of life. And that's so the expectation, regardless of how old we are, is to get better.
You know what?
Do you think of this 49ers team as being old or young?
Yes. They're older on offense. They're younger on defense. You know what? Can I tell you something? And I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's something that I just love his tone.
Saleh?
Yeah. He's completely different on the field. I don't know, man. I liked his voice. It sounded really cool. Sounded nice. I liked what he was saying.
I mean, that sounds like the voice of a head coach, of which he's been for the last few seasons.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is, though, there could be a double whammy with the defense, and it's this. Okay, let's say the organization is bracing us for, look, you know, hang with us. There may be some growing pains on defense. The important thing is we're going to get better over the course of the season. See, this is where the schedule comes in. Because if your defense is struggling against the teams they're playing, like, it would be one thing if, you know, Philly was on the schedule and KC and Buffalo and Green Bay and Dallas and Washington and the defense struggles, you could be like, well, you know, it's kind of understandable. But if you're playing Jacksonville, the Giants, the Bears, the Titans, the Browns, like, they still may struggle, but it can't look awful against those teams in general.
Well, and with Saleh, I think what he's trying to do, and what I myself am taking his lead with, his tempering expectations. I don't understand why, with six new starters, potentially eight, people just assume the Niners are going to win the NFC West. I think the Rams are pretty damn good, and they were they were 10 yards away from beating the eventual Super Bowl champ last year, and they brought most of their team back, and they added Devontae Adams. I think the Rams are going to be good this season. I don't think it's a given whatsoever the Niners are going to just use this last place schedule, to cakewalk to the division. I don't think that's a given whatsoever.
No, I don't think it's a given at all. I will say this, though, about Saleh. He's coming back at a time where the defense is as in flux as it's been probably since Shanahan's first 2 years. And knowing what happened with Sorensen and Wilkes before, like, he's the guy to coach the defense at this point where it's going to be a young team and they need to grow and gel. Like, I do feel like, I think Saleh is a good defensive coach. Like, better than the guys they've had since him. Although D'Amico Ryans was there after him, right?
Yeah. Let's
leave him out of it because he was good. But
look at last season. Like, I think this is another part, too. Kyle Shanahan wants guys on his coaching staff that he trusts. Because it's not just Robert Saleh. He brought back Gus Bradley, who is a veteran defensive mind. He's also, I think, the assistant head coach. But he moved away from someone he felt like had, I don't know, whether it's knowledge or continuity. Nick Sorensen, gone. Brandon Staley, gone. Those guys are, I think, they're smart people individually, but I don't know if they had Kyle Shanahan's trust. Clearly Steve Wilkes didn't, even though his defense was one that helped them get to a Super Bowl. But he needs someone in that position that he believes in and trusts wholeheartedly, and Robert Saleh absolutely is that person.
Well, and I'd even go a step further. I think the fans trust Saleh, and that's a big part of this too, because if let's just say, hypothetically, this was, you know, they're going to have 6-8 new starters, but Sorensen was the coach. Well, if the defense is bad under Sorensen, you know who's probably going to get blamed? Sorensen. But if the defense is bad under Saleh, I'm not saying he won't get criticized, but then I think more people would acknowledge, well, maybe our defense, these guys aren't that good. In other words, I do believe whatever their potential is on the high side, on the bright side defensively, like Saleh will get the best out of this defense, and it won't be a case of as it has been the past few years, where the defensive coordinator is a discussion point. Like it's Robert Saleh. He's done the job before. He did it very well. And, he's not going to get fired after 1 year if the defense doesn't quite come around.
No, you have to give him that benefit of the doubt. I mean, I guess you might lose him to a potential head coaching spot if this actually goes really well.
True.
But that to me would be worst case. Let's go to San Jose. Talk to Guru, who's got an expectation for the 49ers. Yes, this is the action. His name's Guru, Steiny. Don't hold on. Just chill out. What's
better
up?
Better be careful.
How you doing? Hello? Guru, San Jose.
Yep. Oh. Hello.
Hey.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. What's up?
Oh, okay. No worries. Yeah, and so I mean, like you said, right? I mean, I think you guys have been alluding to this. I think people are a little too excited about the Niners coming into this season, and really, like you guys mentioned, like 6 new defensive starters. The defensive line is almost brand new. Upton Stout, who's a rookie, played with the ones yesterday in the slot, and you don't know who your safeties are. So I think. I mean, given the easy schedule, will there be games that the Niners win despite their defense? Yes. But I do think it is a rebuilding year for the defense. I think, Albert Collins is a good player. Michael Williams is a good player. It's going to take 2 to 3 years for those guys to come around, just like it took 2 to 3 years for DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead to come around, right? And so I think if the fans have that expectation to be like, okay, let's go through the growing pains with this with the defense, because the Niners absolutely made the right decision this offseason going to the draft for the defensive line. This was the best defensive line draft in years. And so, like, having that in mind and coming into the offseason thinking, okay, you got your quarterback, you got him signed for the next 5 years, right? What can you do in the next 5 years to try and improve your defense to get to that Super Bowl level eventually? I think this team is right this year. They're a borderline playoff team, depending on how the year goes, what their injury luck is like. But in 2 to 3 years, they can be really good. So I think that's the focus. How can they be really good 2 to 3 years from now? What are the holes we have going in the next offseason that we can address? I think that's the mentality this team has, frankly.
Thanks, Guru. No, appreciate that. I think that's pretty spot on, and a lot of that is how I feel about this squad.
Yeah, I think he's right. He, in the first part of his statement, he said, 5 years. And I was like, well, that's a little too long. And then he said 2 or 3 years. And I agree. Can you rebuild the defense and compete for a playoff spot and possibly get in? If you can, that's a successful season.
You know, how are you feeling about the Niners? Look, third day of training camp, offense pretty much set. Concrete back from last year. The defense, meanwhile, 6 spots. Robert Saleh saying there's going to be a gelling period. We're going to hear him talk about rookies versus veterans in just a moment. But tempering expectation, is that what you're hearing? Or are you hearing an excitement for a brand new group of guys that you feel like have the opportunity to do something special and maybe be a little bit ahead of the curve? We're going to talk about that. Also got a MLB trade deadline stuff coming up in just a bit. The news out of the Valkyries that Kayla Thornton has underwent successful knee surgery for an injury she sustained at practice earlier this week, is going to miss the remainder of the season. And obviously tonight's game at 7 o'clock against the Dallas Wings, you can hear all on the Odyssey app on the Valkyries channel right here on 95.7 The Game. So that is unfortunate. But we're going to continue on Evan Giddings alongside Matt Steinmetz. That segment brought to you by Honda of Vallejo.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.